Thank you. Thanks, bro.
Wow, okay. Hi. Welcome, everybody, and just send lots of peaceful, calm energy towards you. We just had a big AV crisis for about half an hour, and it's resolved. It's one of those things where, it's those times when you really need your breath and sometimes you can't catch it. So. You can't be in a circle. Okay. Is there any way you can just inch in like a couple of feet? Really exciting little circles being filled tonight for this afternoon by Chuck and his companions, so I hope you don't mind and you don't think it's going to get a lot of exposure. I have a feeling we're going to be on the end of the cutting floor because this is not an exciting image, but we'll see. So there's a couple people who haven't been to my series yet, right? What's your name? Have you seen?
Anne-Marie.
Hi.
Karima.
And let's just keep on going. Now, every day we've been saying this phrase, it is the beloved whom I see in all names and forms. And so we look at Anne-Marie and we see the divine being in this name and form. And we look at Karima and we see the divine being in this name and form. I know, it makes everybody smile and laugh and kind of blush. Like, oh, moi? The divine being? Oh, all right. And then we kind of laugh a little bit.
Connie.
And we see the divine being in this beloved here.
Nura. Nura Grace.
It is the beloved whom I see in all names and forms.
Melinda.
It is the beloved whom I see in all names and forms.
Inaji.
It is the beloved whom I see in all names and forms.
Majida.
It is the beloved whom I see in all names and forms. Amir.
It is the beloved whom I see in all names and forms.
Simi.
It is the beloved whom I see in all names and forms.
It is the beloved whom I see in all names and forms.
I wanted to say that Baba says that, my peer says that when the technology goes, it's Chaja Chizr. It's Chizr who comes and messes with the technology right in that moment where you think you most need it, and it takes us back to the technology. So this is the teke knowledge, and it just brought you back to your breath.
The teke or the teke? Teke.
The teke, like the teke.
Right, no, but it's funny that it's technical and it's teke.
Yeah, that's the joke.
That's the joke.
this teke, your breath.
I know.
And it brought you right back. So thank you, Chaja Chizr, for your intervention.
What's your name?
Kashfia.
Hi, Kashfia. It is the beloved whom I see
in all names
and
forms.
Ooh, Robbie, are you joining us?
Yes, please.
It is the beloved whom I see in all names and forms. I need 1 minute of music. We're going to make this like a Reader's Digest version of this song.
What's this?
This is Water Day, so...
The ocean refuses no river.
Because when you're trying to get ready for a presentation and somebody's filming you and all of a sudden my computer's not working, their AV system's not working, and everything is going sideways because of Hizzer, apparently. It's these little traumas that happen. It's not, you know, this is a first world problem. To call it trauma is really big quotation marks. But they do leave a mark. They leave a mark in us, this stress in everyday life. And so music, of course, can be very healing, but especially music added to the imagery. The ocean refuses no river. The ocean wouldn't even refuse me in my most maniacal, crazy, cursing state. Oh, what's wrong with the AV? Oh, my computer's frozen. Ah. The ocean wouldn't even refuse that. It accepts every river of every state, every personality, everybody who thinks they're good, everybody who might be evil, everybody who's a combination thereof. The ocean refuses no river. Ishq Allah Mabudala. So this is intentional use of symbology. We've been talking about the whole art and science of Naqshbandi for the last couple of days. Naqshbandi being the way we weave in meaningful and powerful symbols onto things, such as the heart, but it could also be onto a carpet, or into a song, or onto a, bless you, onto a heart and wings piece of jewelry, or any way that we can actually bring the powerful symbols into our life. So the two ways we've been looking at this is seeing symbols in everyday life and getting medicine from it. So even straight lines, vertical lines, is something as simple as that. In other words, there's symbols everywhere, and it needs the eye of the seer, the glance. Seer is a funny word, isn't it? Because it means the one who sees, but it could also mean, in Farsi, the secret heart, seer. Since we're on puns today.
Beautiful pun.
It's a good pun. So the other way, though, is a very intentional use of symbology for unfoldment and healing, and that would be things like putting things into songs, but it could also mean flowers on an altar, what we wear. You intentionally chose these colors today. You could have worn other colors, but there's medicine in color, there's medicine in all forms.
Watercolors.
And so we can use symbology as an intentional form of healing, and even then it bifurcates into two ways. One is to add in, and the other is to take out. What do we want to add in? Well, we want to add in the symbology medicine, which is medicine, good medicine. So, like that beautiful outfit you were wearing yesterday, I looked at it and I felt that in itself is healing for me, just to see that color. So for you, I imagine wearing it all day must have been really nice.
There were hearts.
Wonderful compliments, yes.
Hearts, and there were swords, cross swords and hearts. And so this is very intentional. We look in our wardrobe and sometimes we find something like, that's the right thing to wear. It will really uplift me. It will be the right energy. But of course, other times we need to use a certain medicine to take away things, to take away impurities, to take away impressions that are very unhelpful for the heart, unhelpful for the nervous system. We might do a little bit of that today. A story that I thought of that my teacher tells is an example of that, where it's using a bit of both. And this was about a healer that he knew in the American Southwest, and the healer's name was Beautiful Painted Arrow. Does anybody know him? He's apparently a well-known First Nations shaman in that area. And a friend of Shahapati, my teacher. And he was visited by a family who had a small child, a boy of about 7 or 8 years old, who had this terrible, relentless chest infection that would not go away, something like I had this winter, as a matter of fact. This boy was so sick with it that he was losing the capacity to function in a way that a boy could, like go to school or do any activities. And he'd been through all the different forms of medicine. They'd taken him to allopathic, to naturopaths, to you name it, the whole gamut of healers, and nothing was working. And so they brought him to Beautiful Painted Arrow, and Beautiful Painted Arrow says, I think I can help, but I want to take your boy out to the desert. And so they went out to the desert, where he knew there was a big termite hill. And he asked the boy to cough up enough phlegm that would fill a handkerchief, which the boy did. And Beautiful Painted Arrow made the boy watch this, because remember, if you've been here for the last couple of days, the quality of attention is very important in making the symbol work. You can't just have the symbol there and be kind of like this. If the rose is in the room but you don't see the rose, it's not going to do anything for you. So you really have to see the rose. So he really had to see his mucus. And then the shaman mixed honey in with the mucus. And then he walked the boy out and said, I'm going to put this right here in front of the big termite hill. And then they walked back away at a distance. And he said, watch that termite hill and watch the handkerchief and don't take your eyes off of it. And so the boy did this. And pretty soon all the bugs came out of the hill, thousands, and were all just descending on this mound of honey with the mucus in it from the boy's chest. His illness, in other words. And the boy watched them all like devour this. And he got better. It's a great story, and it takes a great healer to know what would work, because I had a chest infection this year. That might have not worked for me. Maybe something else would have had to work for me, but the healer knew what would work for that boy. But of course, he had to watch it. He had to pay attention. So this is intentional use of symbology and intentional use of attention to both remove something, to remove an impression, but also to add something in, the sweetness. So this working with symbology, it's important to remember that it's here all the time, but it's both an art and a science. And it's to study it, when you study it more and more and more, you begin to actually see how you can use it in your everyday life in a way that's so helpful for, again, adding in the right marks, naksh, on you, and removing the ones, or at least making them fade, that are continuing to delay you, harm you, be an obstacle in your path, which we all have. So let's just practice this. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. I'm just going to give you an image. And maybe you can just close your eyes and feel your breath for a moment. And I'm going to ask you to do something while you find your breath. It's just kind of going through the Rolodex of difficult marks that are on your being. And I want you to find something, and it might be, for me, for example, it might have been my state 15 minutes ago when I was in technology hell. So anything that's marked on you that you wouldn't want to stay with you, you would like to actually see that impression fade. So that's a very minor one, but we could also look at something that perhaps has more pain or toxicity associated with it. So I'm going to ask you to just find something. None of us have shortages of these things. So just find one thing, and it can be something from the very recent past, or it could be something from your childhood or anything in between. One impression that you would like to dissolve. And I'm going to open my eyes. Put up your hand. Keep your eyes closed, but put up your hand if you need more time for this.
If you did what?
Put up your hand if you need more time to find that impression. Okay, well, so just another half minute or so. And if you don't choose one that's too big or heavy duty. Just any mark. It might just be a lingering argument that you have with somebody. And just raise your hand. Those people who needed more time, raise your hand when you've got it. So now what I'd like you to do is to imagine a big fishbowl in front of you that's got very clear water in it. And I want you to imagine that there's a fountain pen with black ink in your hand and a piece of paper. And I want you to pay very close attention to everything you're doing the same way that the shaman asked that boy to pay very close attention to the anthill and the mucus honey combination. Pay very much attention to the piece of paper now as you write down, either in a symbol or a word or two or a sentence, the impression that you would like to see fade, disappear, dissolve in you. Find a way you can just make a mark on it. You know what it is. It doesn't have to be a whole diary story. It could just be a word or a sentence. And see yourself writing that. And once it's finished writing, I want you to look at that piece of paper and see it very clearly. And now take that piece of paper and lay it on the water of the fishbowl upside down. So the side that you just wrote on, turn it upside down and put it on top of the fishbowl that has beautiful clear water in it. And begin to see the ink from this fountain pen that you wrote on the paper begin to come off the paper. So you see the ink beginning to descend into the water. And pretty soon you see the piece of paper become so waterlogged that it too begins to sink into the water. And the mark that you made on that paper is now dissolving into liquid ink that's now very slowly making its way around the bowl of pure water, which is gladly consuming that ink. Really look at that. And now pick up the bowl with your hands and imagine that you are now magically in front of a rushing river. And there you have your fishbowl in your hands, and you've got the rushing river, and you're going to very respectfully, honorifically pour that impression into the flowing river. That blackened water is now going to go into that very pure river, and it's just going to take it to the ocean. Just watch it go. Now return to your breath, just stay by the river and return to your breath. And begin to use the breath of water, the purification breath of water, where you're breathing out through the mouth and in through the nose. Make your breath natural but also deep at the same time. through the nose, out through the mouth. And the color vibration we breathe with this elemental breath is a kind of sea green. So you might see that color, but you might also, rather than seeing it with your inner eye, just imagine you could feel the musical vibration of sea green. It's a vibration. A moment ago we worked with just one impression, and now we're going to feel the heart in a way that we're aware that the heart has many, 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 many marks on it that have been difficult marks, difficult impressions. And it's kind of like dust. It's kind of like what we want to wash off when we're in the shower off of our body, a kind of just a sense of film. Or it could be even so much as mud, if you've been out in the mud. And so we're going to wash that with this water breath from both sides. We're going to imagine that the in-breath is bringing up clear water from an underground spring. So imagine that the spring is coming up through the heart on the way up, and this is the inhalation. It's inhaling through the mouth, and this water energy is coming up through the heart, and giving it a nice wash. And then as we breathe out through the mouth, it's going to wash from above. It could be like the waterfall, but when I was doing this earlier, it became like the spring coming up through the inhalation in the nose, and then becoming like vapor into the heavens. And then out of the heavens, that vapor coalesces into rain, and the big, beautiful, clear rainfall comes down through the heart and just washes your whole field of heart. Not one particular impression, but as if your feeling heart could just have a beautiful shower of water energy. Just do that another few times. In through the nose, the water is up from the spring, and that water energy goes into vapor. The vapor coalesces into rain clouds, and the rain comes down as you breathe out through the mouth, washing, purifying. Finish your next breath, let your breathing return to its natural in and out flow, and just feel the state of the heart. What does that mean? It just means feel the state of that place in you that feels on the surface but also feels very deeply. Your sensitive nature. Feel ready, open up your eyes. I once had a teacher that said, I was telling this teacher about being in the Himalayas when I was a very young man and having to go without a shower for a couple weeks because I was out trekking in the high Himalayas in Ladakh. And my only my only way I could get clean was to go in the frigid waters up there, like that's way up high and it's cold. And I do that from time to time, but there's no way I could put my whole body in there. You get hypothermia in like 2 seconds. And he said a very interesting thing. He said, if you ever are in that situation again, just imagine that you're in a shower. Just really do what we just did right now. And of course, you won't actually physically get clean. But when we take a shower, he said, part of it's the physical, but much more of it is the psychological and the ethereal and the all the things that you can actually do in the inner plane that you don't actually need H2O for. And I've done that from time to time, and actually, you feel much cleaner afterwards. You may still look muddy. You know, it's not like it's going to get rid of the mud. There's nothing magical about it, but the power of the mind, working with the heart that way, is, well, I'm preaching to the choir, as they say, because if you didn't believe that, you wouldn't be at an event like this. You'd be, I don't know, you'd be somewhere else. So, of course, you all believe that. So I wanted to read just a couple paragraphs from Murshid, from Hazrat Khan on water, and then I'd like to show you a video that, God willing, inshallah, is still working. Brett's over there, he's got his thumbs up, and this guy never gets stressed. You know, he's the right man for his work, because he's always got somebody around him with flapping. It's usually me, going, ah, ah. But he's just, oh, it'll work.
MashaAllah,
there's no way I could do that job. But anyway, here's Hazrat Nayak Khan on water, since today is brought to us by water. You know how Sesame Street is brought to us by water? Today, the symbology class of Amirul Lakhan is brought to us by water. In the old scriptures, such as the Vedanta and the Old Testament, spirit is symbolized as water. One wonders why something which is near to the earth, as water is, should be considered symbolically as spirit. The nature of water is to give life to the earth, and so the nature of the spirit is to give life to the body. Without water, the earth is dead, and so is the body without soul. Without water, the earth is dead, so the body is without soul or spirit. Water and earth both mix together, so the spirit mixes with matter and revivifies it. And yet spirit stands above matter, as water in time lets the earth sink to the bottom and stands itself above the earth. But one may ask, is the spirit hidden under matter as the soul in the body? I will answer, so the water stays beneath the earth. There is no place where water does not exist. There are places where earth is not to be found. So there is nowhere in space where spirit is absent. Only the absence of matter is possible. Did y'all get that? Spirit is not there. So water is like that. You couldn't go anywhere on this planet and not find water. You might have to dig down a mile or two. You're going to find water. Water is water. It's there everywhere, inside of things. It's even on Mars. The symbolic way, and this is now getting back to where I started today, the symbolic way of expressing high ideas does not come from the brain. It is an outcome of intuition. The beginning intuition is to understand the symbolical meaning of different things, and the next step is to express things symbolically, like the shaman did. It is a divine art in itself, and the best proof of it is to be found in the symbol of water, which is so fitting to express the meaning of spirit. It's hard to hear words being read, but I want to read that again. Pay attention to this last sentence. It is a divine art in itself, and the best proof of it is to be found in the symbol of water. Hazrat Khan's superlative should not be ignored. The best use of symbolism is water. And he doesn't just say that in the Gathas. I did a count, as I've been telling you, I did a count of all the sayings and phrases where the symbology is really the prevalent modality. Water outnumbers all the others, like 5 to 1 to the next one, which is flowers and then celestial bodies. So the other elements hardly get any play. Earth, fire, air. There's definitely sayings, there's definitely teachings on those. They're like this, water. I'm not kidding, like this. It's the best use of symbol to express the meaning of deep spirit. So, I'd like to show this movie now. We're gonna put the lights off, but let me tell you first of all why I wanted to show this. Hajar Nayakhan's teachings on symbology are throughout all the message volumes, but primarily in the Gathas and then in his rituals in Zerat, universal worship, and the sayings, the complete sayings, which I don't have in front of me. It's in a few places he doesn't just drop a symbol in, but he actually speaks for pages of the message volume using a symbol, and this is one of those times. You're going to hear me reading one of those talks, and this is a talk called The Qualities of the Heart, and it's all using water images to explain our states of heart. And the Sufi or any mystic needs to have an intimate knowledge of the states of heart to be able to use these things intentionally, but also to understand each other. To understand, for example, when a person's in their natural heart state or when they're in their unnatural heart state, and not to confuse it, because sometimes people are not in their natural heart state. Some people's natural heart state may be very sulfuric, I'm just giving you a little trailer, or very salty, like salt water, or very sweet. We've all got every one of these qualities of heart in us. But we also have to know and find our natural place and love that place. We can't all be sweet, and we can't all be salt. We can't all be sulfuric. We can't be all vaporous. So when you watch the video, you understand what I'm saying. So please get a seat where you can see the screen. And yes, you can sit in the theater seating if you like.
Oh, okay.
I can't promise I'm bringing you popcorn, but you might as well sit in the... There are people who look at life through their brain, their head. And there are others who look at life through their heart. Between these two points of view, there is a vast difference. So much difference that something that one person can see on the earth, the other sees in heaven. Something that one sees as small, the other sees as great. Of something that one sees as limited, the other sees the unlimitedness. These two persons become opposite poles. It is as if one is looking at the sky, the other at the earth. No one will admit they look at things with their head. Everyone will say, I look at life with my heart. If they knew what it is to look at life from the heart, the best person in the world would say, I have not yet learned to look at life in the heart. I would like to know how to do it. I would like to learn it. One might say that emotional and devotional people are flying in the clouds, while others with their reason and logic are standing on the earth. Yes, it is true. But angels ride on the clouds. If the soul has the angelic quality, the clouds are its sphere, not the earth. Now one may ask, where is the place for practicality in life? Yes, but what one calls practical everyday life, and one is very careful about, what is it, how long does it last, what is it worth? No doubt it is true that we are born on earth to bear the weight of our physical body, and with it, its needs. A roof over our head and a piece of bread to sustain us. If that is all there is to think about, we make a great mistake.
if we devote all our life to what we call practicality, practical life, and never think of the heavenly treasure that is hidden in the heart of a human being. The heart can be likened to water. Either it is frozen and then it is snow, or it is water and then it is liquid. When it is frozen, it is turned into a crystal. When it is liquid, it is in running order. It is natural for water to be running. Then there are two principal kinds of water: salt water and sweet water. The sea, which is quite contented in itself, indifferent to everything else, has salt water because it is independent of anything else. It gives health, happiness, and pleasure to those who walk along it, because it represents perfection. It asks nothing from anyone. It rises and falls within itself. It is independent. It is immense. In that way, it shows perfection. But with that independent perfection, its water is not sweet. And the ascetic, who has closed their heart with the perfection of God and with the realization of truth, is like the sea, independent, indifferent to all things. Their presence heals people. Their contact gives them joy, gives them peace. And yet their personality is uninteresting. The water of the sea is salt water. When the sea is calm, it is a pleasure to travel on it. And when the sea is rough, there is no worse illness than seasickness. So is the power of the mind of the soul, that has touched perfection. It is with tranquility, calmness, and peace that this mind gives everyone a way into it, as the sea lays itself with open heart before those who journey on it. Ships and boats pass through it. Those who journey enjoy their traveling. But when the sea is disturbed by the wind, by storm, it is perfect in its annoyance. It can shake boats and steamers. And so the mind of the sage can have an effect upon all things in nature. It can cause volcanic eruptions. It can cause disasters, revolutions, all manner of things, once its tranquility is disturbed. Knowing this nature of the sage's heart, and knowing the great powers that a being who has touched divine perfection possesses, people in the East regard closely the pleasure and displeasure of the sage. They think to annoy a sage is like annoying the whole of nature. To disturb his or her tranquility means to shake the whole universe. The storm in the sea is a very small thing, whereas the heart that has touched perfection, if once upset, can upset the whole universe. The water of the river is sweet. It is sweet because it is attracted to the sea. It is longing to reach the sea. The river represents the loving quality, a quality that is seeking for the object it loves. A heart that loves God and its perfection is likened to the river that seeks the sea. It is therefore that the personality of the seeker is more pleasant than the personality of the one who is contented with what they know. There is little danger in traveling on the river. There is great joy in swimming in the river. And there is a fine scenery along it to look at. So it is with the personality which is like the river, that running of the feeling of sympathy. That continual running means a living sympathy. The river helps the trees and plants and the earth along it. So does the kind, sympathetic person whose feeling is liquid. Everywhere they go, they take along that influence which nourishes, which helps souls to flourish and to progress. Then one sometimes sees a little stream. It runs. It is not a river. It is a small little stream running. And it is even more beautiful to look at, for it expresses modesty. It expresses fineness of character. It expresses purity. For always the water of a little stream is pure. It expresses the nature of an innocent heart. A heart that cannot be prevented from being sympathetic, from being loving, by any experience of the world which makes water turn bitter. The bitter experience has not touched it, and it is pure and clear. It inspires poets. It uplifts the composer. It quenches the thirst of the thirsty one. It is an ideal spot for a painter to paint. With its modesty, it has purity, and with its purity, it has life. There is also the water of a little pool. It is sometimes muddy, sometimes dirty. Why? Because of its narrowness, because it is small. In the same way, the narrowness of the heart is always muddied, because it is narrow. And because it is not deep enough, all the elements of the earth enter it and take away its purity. Then there is the water of a large pool, where water lilies grow, where little fishes swim, where the sun is reflected and the moonlight produces a beautiful vision, where one would like to sit and look at it because it expresses to everyone that sees it the liquid nature of the heart. The heart that is not frozen, the heart that is like water. It is still, it is calm. It can make one's heart tranquil to sit by its side. One can see one's reflection in it, for it is calm. It is tranquil. The water of the spring is most healing and most inspiring because it comes from above and falls onto the earth. That is the character of the inspirational mind. The heart, like a spring, pours out water in the form of inspiration, be it in poetry, be it in music, in whatever form. It has beauty. It has a healing quality. It can take away all the worries, anxieties, difficulties, and troubles of those who come to it. Like the water of a spring, it not only inspires, but it heals. Then there is a fountain that rises and falls in so many drops. It is human-made, as the personality also is human made. When one is made a personality, then the feeling that rises from the heart through the personality is like the fountain. Each drop falling from it comes in the form of a virtue. The water that rises from the sea towards the sky in the form of vapor represents the aspiration of the heart. The heart that aspires upward, that wishes to reach upward, that heart shows the quality of vapor. It is the heart of the devotee, of the seeker, the heart of the one who is always conscientiously seeking the higher ideal, touching the higher principles. In the form of clouds, that heart of aspiration forms itself and pours down, just like the rain, bringing celestial beauty in the form of art, poetry or music, or anything that is good and beautiful. There are hearts that have been impregnated with fire for a long, long time. Then comes the sulfuric water from him, purifying and healing. The heart has gone through fire. It has gone through suffering. And therefore, it can heal those who suffer. There are hearts with many different qualities. Like water may contain different chemical substances. Those who have suffered, those who have gone through the test of patience, those who have contemplated. These hearts all represent one or the other kind of the water that heals, and so do the personalities. Persons who have had deep experiences of any kind, of suffering, of agony, of love, of hate, of solitude, of association, of success, of failure. All have a particular quality, a quality which has a particular use for others. Knowing this, we will come to this conclusion. Whatever has been my life's destiny, my heart, through sorrow or pain, through joy or pleasure, has prepared a chemical substance that serves a certain purpose for humanity. And I can only give that chemical substance for the use of humanity if I keep my heart awake and open. Once the heart is closed, once it is frozen, once it is turned from a warm heart into a stone, the person is no longer living. It does not matter what they have gone through, for even the worst poison can be of some use. There is no person, therefore, however wicked, who is of no use. If only they know that there is one condition for being useful to humanity, and that is to keep the heart open. To keep the heart open.
So great.
Yes, that's pretty hard.
All right. If you got a thumb drive, I'll put it on for you.
I'll go to my office. I'll go to my room and get it. Yeah.
Thanks, Brett.
Play that.
So you liked that, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. What did you like about it? What? Let me put it this way. Because we're talking about symbology and we're talking about medicine. So what made you feel good? Was it the words? Was it, yeah.
It was very, it opened up more places in my heart, which is feeling already very open today. So my heart is opening, really expanded. And then what I did was it opened up areas, I want to say chambers, but like behind this, my heart feeling open, there are these other places, you know, where I carried those other qualities. And there's more than one chemical in my heart. And so the sea is a big part of my heart. I spent many years around the sea. And when I saw the pictures that reminded me of the sea, it was just like, I just went there. You know, I went back to years of watching the ocean. It was like, and then the river, where I live on the river. So I love the river, and so that's another part of my heart. So it's like it kept opening up these different places in my heart. When I'm saying, so my heart got bigger. So that's what it did for me. It was like it kept opening up these other areas out here, and then my affinity with that part of water. And kept getting bigger, and that's why it was very expansive. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I feel like everyone needs to see that, Amir.
Everyone?
Yeah, I feel like
that
should
be part
the morning
of the evening program.
Yeah, I feel like Alfred is the morning attunement. Like,
yes.
It's so, so beautiful.
When did you produce it? How long ago?
It's extraordinary.
Oh, just about a month ago. It was in preparation. I made it for you guys.
Okay. So now what?
But it was I tell you, it was so much fun to make that. You know, I thought, I'll just put something together. It'll take me an hour. Well, of course, like 4 or 5 days later, I'm still like playing with images. But it's pretty fun. You know, you read a line from Hazanaya Khan, and you're contemplating these words of our master. And I'm going, okay, well, let's find an image for that. Let's find an image for that. And pretty soon I'm finding, you know, I don't know how many images were in that, but a lot.
And very beautiful images.
Thank you for, I can't take credit for the actual photography.
But the choosing,
yeah.
And the colors that go with the words.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun.
There were really beautiful images of African-American men in there. And I was so grateful for that.
I felt like
because
a child.
Every day, like, I read about, like, the death of another person. And I've just been, like, carrying this. And, you know, so there was Nelson Mandela and there was Muhammad Ali, but then there was this beautiful, tender young man. And it was very powerful. That was That was one of the most healing things for me. In the images, that was by far the most healing image, was seeing that. Because, you know, the South Asian women, well, we're always, like, spiritual and holy, and that's an iconic, stereotypical thing that I have to push against politically, you know?
You're doing your part, huh?
I'm not sure. Well, I'm dressed like this, I'm probably not doing my part. Maybe I don't feel like I need to push against it here with heads, there were images of spirit and of water that we don't see as get to some of the images as well. So I was grateful.
Yeah, you were going to say something.
I felt very childlike, seeing the world for the first time. That's how it felt for me.
Nora Grace, are you able to hear people? Do you want people to speak up a little bit?
No, I'm good.
Do you get it? Okay. Yeah, that was one of my intentions was to, and the music really helps too, because that particular piece of music is so pure.
Mm.
And I, it, supposed to hit you unconsciously because I kept it pretty low in the background, but...
Yeah, because I'm just saying, I just now didn't even pay attention to the music.
That's good. You're not supposed to. But it really does play to that part of us that's very innocent, and so we can open to these images and let them work on us. So this is how symbolism works, because probably I asked you to say much about the actual words that Hazrat Khan was saying that I was narrating. You probably couldn't remember too many of them, even though they were there. You probably might be able to remember some of them. Once in a while I would put the words, you know, I would type them in the title and just kind of blast it at you a little bit, just as a way to kind of reorient people to the words a little bit. But it, you know, doesn't actually last very long, because images are more powerful than words. That's, he's saying this all through his teachings on symbology, and that's also why he was using all the water imagery to teach us about the qualities of the heart and how we can be useful to humanity. Because I think so many human beings don't believe they can be useful to humanity because of their damaged heart, or just the personality of their heart. I think people are told that somehow they have to be really sweet to have their heart be useful to humanity, but not everybody's heart is like this. Some people's hearts are very independent, very aloof, like the salt sea heart. But even the hearts that are very muddy or they're useful to humanity on one condition. What was the condition? Well,
open.
Keep the heart open. You know, and so I repeated that a few times just to make sure you got it at the end. But Murshid really says that so beautifully at the end, this no matter what chemical ratio there is of these qualities in our heart, it doesn't matter. Because if we're in our natural heart state and the heart is open, then we can be useful to humanity. We don't even have to try properly. We're just useful to humanity. But we can have the most incredible instrument of the heart, but if it's not open, then we're of no use. It's like those dead flowers.
I found it really profound how it was mixed together. And it gave me a solution I was looking for. I teach at Columbia School of Social Work, and I was thinking about the first day of class in this particular course, which is on social welfare. So as social workers, we are given this charge to be of assistance, to be a helper, right, in the world. And how then do you draw the connection between a macro course and a spiritual intention, right? This gives me that ability to do that, because yes, I want them to get the content of the course, but I want to deal with it from the content of their heart. Because who they are as a person, as a social worker, is going to make all the difference. Mm-hmm. If it's clinical, mm-hmm. if it's family systems, if it's macro, whatever the case is, it still gets down to the quality of their heart. In addition to the fact, these are all the hearts you're going to encounter.
Yes.
So how will you engage this other heart that may be very different than yours? What will you do?
Yeah.
Right? A softy heart, a soft heart. So it gives me a wonderful metaphor in terms of teaching them in their profession of a social worker, of what the work really is. It's not clinical, it's not macro, it's not family.
And we're not here to change anybody's quality of heart either, which is what social workers should be taught, like, day one. Your job is not to
fix
go
people.
in there and, I'm a social worker, change people's hearts. It's to understand them and to help that heart become
itself.
Yes.
Yes.
And you know, at the front end of that talk, Hazrat Khan is saying, many of us think that we look at life through our heart. But basically he was saying, you know, if you think that you look through life with your heart, you're probably kidding yourself. Look again. Because it really takes an amazingly developed human being to truly look at life through the heart. That's why I put a picture of him up there. You know, if you want to learn, you have to go to the ones who have their heart really open, and they see their life through their heart. So if we had more helpers, social workers, nurses, or anybody who could truly, at least most of the time, see life with their heart, well, we wouldn't be figuring stuff out with our heads so much, that's for sure. And we wouldn't be trying to heal with our head either with a bunch of words. We would be doing it just with heart energy.
If there's a conversation in the order of bringing social workers, psychologists, mental health workers together in this very conversation, this is what we're doing, so, yeah.
How about others that we haven't heard from? And you don't, that's not just about the video. I wanted to also ask about how it was to do that impression, dissolution exercise. We didn't really talk about that, and it was a very brief one. Usually I would do that much longer. I just did a real kind of fast one, but I did want to say one more thing about that, just going back to that exercise we did of putting the impression down on paper, putting it in the fishbowl, letting the ink come out, and then putting it into the river. This is an age-old Sufi technique, and you can make up your own variations, and you can work with whatever element you want to work with. You can put the impression into whatever form you want to, and then you can bury it if you want to work with the earth element. Just don't bury it on your own property, by the way, just a little technique. Don't bury it where you live. That seems kind of obvious, but I've had people actually, when I told them to do that, they said, yeah, I buried it in the backyard. You know, take it at least in the neighbors.
The dog even does that.
Or take it to the park or something, and you take that piece of paper, or you take whatever form, you could make a sculpture or whatever it is of that impression, that trauma, that event, or that mark, and bury it.
Ask permission first.
Sorry?
Ask permission first. Of a mother.
Oh, of Mother Earth, yes, absolutely.
Ask permission first.
And Mother Earth will never not give you permission, but it's good to ask. Mother Earth is.